and tuning on to the Real World Podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is Percy Local Journalism Initiative News Producer Jesse Bell. This week, the news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, bringing you the latest in local and regional news in collaboration with our partner media outlets. Our first story is by CFRC's own Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie on the recent launch of the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition's local advocacy efforts during a town hall on September 28th.
The Kingston Climate Justice Coalition, a newly formed group made up of various environmental advocacy organizations in the city, will be launching with a Kingston Climate Action Town Hall on Saturday, September 28th. Also known as KCJC, the group's founding members include 350 Kingston, Just Futures Kingston, No Clear Cuts Kingston, OPERG, Queen's Backing Action on the Climate Crisis, Providence Center, Yellow Bike Action, and Seniors for Climate Action Now. These organizations all came together with the goal of building a more coherent strategy to advocate for climate justice. The town hall event is also the unveiling of the group's first Kingston City Council report card, a document which will cover the successes and shortcomings of the city in terms of climate justice. I sat down with Eric McBay, lead on climate justice at Providence Center and founding member of KCJC, to talk about the formation of the coalition, the town hall this weekend, and the Kingston City Council report card. The Kingston Climate Justice Coalition is a relatively new group, if I'm not mistaken. What's the story there? Who's involved and how did it all come together?
Yeah, the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition is new. And so it really emerged out of some discussions earlier this year around advocacy on climate issues to Kingston City Council. As you may know, Kingston's climate leadership plan calls for both the municipality and the community at large to be carbon neutral by the year 2040. But there have been a number of delays on important actions to make that happen. And one of the things we heard at a council meeting this in January was a councilor who said, well, you know, Kingston's already doing as much as it can on climate change. Unfortunately, that's just not true. Kingston is doing some promising things, but there are also a lot of things it's committed to doing that it hasn't done yet. And so because of those events, a number of different groups in our area decided, okay, we really need to come together to kind of build a more coherent strategy so that we can do more advocacy and education work, both of, you know, councillors and the community at large. And so we have a number of different members, including 350 Kingston, Just Futures Kingston, National Farmers Union, Local 316, No Clear Cuts Kingston, OPERG, Queen's Backing Action on the Climate Crisis, and Seniors for Climate Action Now. And so it's been a very exciting, I think, and productive time for all of these groups to get together and talk about our common issues, our common concerns, and more importantly, the actions that that we want to see happen in Kingston, both from the municipality and I think from the community at large. And so this Saturday, the 28th, September 28th, is kind of our big launch for the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition. It's going to be our chance to introduce everyone to what this new coalition is doing, but also to share a report card on the state of climate action in Kingston.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that background. And we'll get into the City Council report card, which I believe is a big piece of this event. But before that, we've seen rallies, protests, celebrations, galas hosted by our community climate action groups. What was the decision-making process behind making this a town hall event?
So we really wanted it to be as participatory and as inclusive as possible. Mm-hmm. I think for me, one of the most important things that I see in organizing around climate justice is that it affects every single part of our lives, right? It affects the kind of food that we can eat and where it comes from. It affects the cost of living. Increasingly, it affects immigration and refugees. The United Nations predicts that by the year 2050, there will be more than 1.2 billion people displaced by climate change. And so it's a very urgent problem that affects everyone, but it also affects everyone in different ways, right? And that's one of the reasons that we wanted to identify climate justice as a priority and not just climate change in general or climate action. It's important to recognize that, you know, people who have a lot of power or wealth or privilege, they're affected by climate change in different ways than people who have less kind of status. One of the issues that we care about, for example, is adequate temperatures in residences and rental units. So many people who are in rental units don't have enough insulation. They don't have enough. They don't have air conditioning, and so during heat waves, they might be at risk of heat problems, especially people who are senior citizens. And so the reason we wanted to have this climate town hall was to really give a chance to represent the different overlapping issues that groups have, but also for people to come and share their own concerns and share their own visions for what Kingston could look like in 2040 and beyond.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. And introducing the Kingston City Council report card, I was wondering if you could speak to the reasoning behind this document. I know our Chamber of Commerce did a similar thing last year. Is it going to look like that? What's this document going to look like and provide for our community?
Yeah, so we are going to unveil this document on Saturday, but I will say that this report card is really the result of doing a lot of work with the nonprofit organizations, with members of the coalition, with independent experts to analyze the city of Kingston's track record of action and inaction on the climate crisis. And so the report itself is broken down into different categories like climate targets and accountability, transportation, vulnerable peoples, the built environment, and we've identified where Kingston's making progress, but also where it's fallen short of some of its commitments in the scientific consensus on action. So the report card is very concise, and it identifies really a very brief summary of the status in each of these areas and some of the actions that we want to see for the city to maybe get a better grade, for example. And so we've identified areas where the city is very promising, but also some areas where its actions are inadequate or even harmful. And so we wanted to use the report card approach because climate change is such a complicated and multifaceted issue, right? It's really easy to get lost in the weeds or for people to get confused by all of the different kinds of action, by different regulations, by different organizations and bureaucracies that are at play. And so we wanted to really summarize in a concise way that people could see at a glance the status of climate action in terms of the municipality, in terms of the city of Kingston's actions. And the intent is that this is going to be the first annual report, that this will be an ongoing kind of report card. And it will hopefully offer some guidance for people in the community, but also for city council and staff to prioritize some action that that is urgent, I think, at this point in history.
Awesome. Yeah. And you got into this a bit in that answer there. I imagine you're keeping a lot of your findings under wraps as you prepare to present on Saturday. But what can you tell us right now as we approach the event about what Kingstonians will be able to take away from this new report?
I think that people will be able to take away a few different things. Mm-hmm. On one hand, you know, there are areas where I think Kingston is doing a legitimately good job. And I think it's worth celebrating. And I mean, there are a lot of people working very hard on climate change, both in the kind of city organization within the city structure and people like climate champions and community groups. I also think there are some really important areas where the city is falling behind. And, you know, we live at a very critical moment in history where the decisions that we make in the next few years, in the next few decades, will actually shape the lives and experiences and well-being of people, not just in Kingston, not just in Canada, but all around the world for decades or even centuries. And so it's really important, I think, to speak honestly and identify places that that we can do better as a community and that the city can do better in order to maximize the health and well-being and safety of people here and around the world. I think another thing that people might take away is that, you know, we really already have most of the technologies that we need to address climate change. Sometimes there's this idea that, oh, you know, that we need to wait for some kind of hypothetical breakthrough or we need fusion power or something. And that's really not the case. We already have most of the technologies that we need to adjust to address the climate crisis. It's just a matter of putting into place those actions in a timely way. And lastly, I hope that people will take away is a feeling of possibility and a desire to participate more. So we have some presentations. We have some excellent speakers. So Kyla Tienhara, who's a professor at Queen's University, the chair, Canada Research Chair in Economy and Environment, is going to be speaking. Christine Sipnowich, the co-chair of the Coalition of Kingston Communities, is going to be speaking. There will be people speaking about really in a constructive way, the kinds of actions that we can take to move forward. But we're also going to set aside, a bunch of time, about the last hour or so. It's really going to be small group discussions about these themed areas, facilitated by experts in those areas. So we're going to be inviting people to talk about what they would envision Kingston looking like in 2040, the things that they want to see happen and the things that they want to participate in. So, you know, this is really a constructive way of moving forward and prioritizing action. And so ultimately, I want to see people coming away from the town hall with a sense of hope for the change that is possible to make in our community.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned you foresee this being an annual report.
Yeah, I expect this will continue for some time. I think that it's really critical to have, to have an organization like the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition. And it's important to, to give feedback, and whether that's recognizing good work or highlighting areas where maybe there's some improvements that need to happen. Climate change is not going to be solved overnight, and it's not even going to be solved in 1 or 2 years. It is something that's going to take many years to solve. And I think an organization like the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition has a really important role in kind of elevating community voices, but also being an independent third party, right? I think that when the city releases a budget report, that's reviewed by third-party auditors who make sure that everything is correct and clear. We don't have a mechanism for doing that for climate action or for carbon budgeting. But I think we really need something like that. And I think it's very important to have independent kind of third-party organizations that are accountable to the grassroots, accountable to the community, that can speak to the issues of great importance for people in Kingston and in the entire world.
Once again, that was Eric McBay, lead of climate justice at Providence Center, on the upcoming town hall this weekend, hosted by the Kingston Climate Justice Coalition. To learn more about the coalition and the Kingston Climate Action Town Hall taking place at City Hall on Saturday, you can search Kingston Climate Justice Coalition or visit their page on Eventbrite. This has been Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter with CFRC News.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that report. Coming up next, we have a report by Michelle Dory-Forstel, LGI reporter for the Kingstonist, on the release of a third quarter report by Kingston Police that indicates a decrease in calls for service in Kingston. Kingston Police Chief Scott Fraser has released his third quarter statistical report in advance of the Thursday, October 10th meeting of the Police Service Board. Overall calls for service totaled 12,975 in the July-September quarter, down 296 or 2.25% from the 13,271 that occurred during the third quarter last year. Crimes against persons decreased by 4.5% this quarter compared to a year ago. Sex offenses in particular are down from 48 calls in 2023 to 26 in 2024, a 59% difference quarter over quarter. Crimes against property, on the other hand, have increased by 3.5%. A 15% increase in vehicle thefts combined with other increases in theft 5%, fraud 19%, and mischief 5% were contributing factors. Fraser notes, as always, that caution should be exercised when interpreting these statistics. They represent a snapshot in time and are subject to change as they relate to ongoing investigations. In some cases, it may be determined that the classification of a crime must be recoded, for example, from criminal harassment to harassing phone calls, thus altering the numbers. Use of force statistics capture all use of force options exercised by all responding officers. In the third quarter of 2024, there were a total of 16 incidents for which 10 team and 10 individual reports were filed. For team reports, one report is filed for multiple officers, and multiple types of force can be used during one incident. This total is 55% lower than last year's 28 incidents for which 13 team and 16 individual reports were filed. Fraser further notes that de-escalation was attempted in 14 of these reports. In the five reports where it was not attempted, he writes, de-escalation was either not possible due to immediate action being required or imminent threat or not being applicable, dispatch of an animal, for example. Except for one call regarding an injured animal, Fraser states that all incidents involved subjects who were assaultive, armed, or suspected to be armed with weapons and/or subject to the execution of a warrant. During most incidents, more than one use of force option was used. Fraser will present this report at the Thursday, October 10th, 2024 meeting of the Kingston Police Service Board. The board holds a regular meeting on the third Thursday of each month commencing at 12 o'clock noon in the William Hackett Boardroom at Kingston Police Headquarters, 705 Division Street, unless otherwise indicated on the agenda. This month's meeting is on the second Thursday. In addition, special meetings are called as required. And thank you to Michelle Vidori-Forstel for that report. Up next, we have Ted Evans, LJI reporter for CJAI Amherst Island Radio, on Loyalist Township's aim to secure provincial funding to help complete the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center renewal project.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township will be applying to the Community Sport and Recreation Infrastructure Fund to help complete the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center renewal project. Staff recommended making an application under Stream 1 for the ice pad, boards, and glass with a total estimated cost of approximately $1.5 million. They also recommended applying under Stream 2 for the renewal project in its entirety. Director of Corporate Services Strategy and Innovation at Loyalist Township, Jenna Campbell, explains the possibility of being funded for both streams.
If we are to apply to both streams as is recommended, and we're successful under both streams, we would need to decline the Stream 1 funding and accept the Stream 2 funding only.
Campbell notes how all work included would still be funded.
Staff has reached out to staff from the province and understand that since these streams are reviewed independent of one another, the work that's contemplated under Stream 1, which is the lower cost program, is included in the Stream 2 project as it's presented. But put another way, the pad, boards, and glass that are contemplated under the Stream 1 project are included in the $15.8 million work plan identified for the Stream 2 application.
The focus of the fund is to foster healthier and more active lifestyles for families and to make sport more accessible. Stream 1 of the program is focused on extending the lifespan of existing facilities, maximizing the use of existing facilities, and improving health and safety, accessibility, and environmental standards of facilities. Under Stream 2, the program looks to help more communities across the province host local, national, and international sporting events and competitions. Staff noted that the renewal project aligns well with the objectives in Stream 2, as upgrades could see the potential for investment and economic growth. Campbell explains why applying to both streams made sense for staff.
It would be a reduction of about $1.5 million from the ask under Stream 2. It's just the question of what's likely to be successful. The project on the whole does align very well to the objectives of the Stream 2 program, which include, things like competition ready facilities, accessibility, like a number of things that the project really focuses in on for the Stream 2 application. So I wouldn't want to remove it from Stream 2 and then not be successful in Stream 1 and lose out on the potential funding associated with that work.
According to their report, staff estimates that by April 1st, 2025, 32% of project costs will be unspent, representing $15.8 million of the total $49.5 million project. The Community Sport and Recreation Infrastructure Fund would fund 50% of eligible project costs, up to $10 million per project. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Up next, we have CJPE County FM's LJI reporter in Picton, Brenda Little, reporting on the county's celebration of the start of a new all-timber hospital construction project in the area.
There was a sense of excitement in the air in the main hangar of Base 31 this week as people from all over the county came to celebrate the start of construction of the new hospital. Hosted by the Prince Edward County Memorial Foundation and Quinte Health, people took in the displays showing plans for the hospital, enjoyed eats from the numerous food stations, face paintings for kiddos and adults alike, and listened to the various speakers, including Executive Director Shannon Kuhl and President and CEO of Quinte Health, Stacey Dobb. They all talked about the long journey to make the dream a reality and thanked the various teams involved, but applauded the community for its support and raising $23 million of the $30 required for equipment, furniture, beds, etc. Executive Director of the Foundation, Shannon Kuhl, had this to say.
I personally started working on this project in 2018, so I have joined the community in this effort to bring a new hospital to our community, but it's been a dream and it's a result of a huge amount of effort from a very significant amount of people.
Architect Jason Emery spoke to the audience, giving a detailed description of the new hospital, saying it is the first all-mass timber hospital in North America. He also talked about the environmental impact and that the world is watching this project since it will be the lowest energy use hospital in North America.
One of the things we wanted to mention tonight is that Shannon mentioned you're making history tonight. I want to tell you that you're actually making history in more ways than one. So let's see. If you see that big title on the screen, there's a lot of words there. I'm going to maybe demystify a little bit about that. But big shout out to the Ministry of Health and Infrastructure Ontario, and you heard that Deborah's here this evening representing that team. This is a first for them. They've never, ever done a project quite like this in healthcare, and we're really, really happy that they've been able to make this happen for you and allow us to do it for you as a community. So practitioners, traditionally, medical practitioners, they take something called the Hippocratic Oath, a version thereof. And one of the things that's stated in that is, first, do no harm. Well, the challenge is, how do you follow that ethos when you can read the statement that's up on the screen? It happens that hospitals are some of the worst offenders when it comes to energy use of any building type, period. So how do you reconcile trying to provide this while perhaps maybe doing harm in other ways? So what's exciting is tonight, the groundbreaking ceremony is not just for you, for the community, but it's actually being watched worldwide. In fact, right here in North America, this will be the first all-mass timber hospital ever. You might wonder, why would we do this? I think the hint was in that Hippocratic Oath, perhaps. But there's a bit to it. So if you imagine that mass timber sequesters, it keeps the carbon within the material, the single longest lasting element in any building, we hope, typically, is its underlying structure. And so if we can start to change and build the structures of our new buildings in a carbon-friendly way, well, then all of the energy elements that we'll get better at with time, obviously generating the energy in the best way possible, using it in perhaps a more frugal way, all of that comes together to create a carbon balance in our buildings. And that's what you see on that graph. And of course, we didn't really just stop with the materials of the building. We did much more, and we did much more because of you, because of your support. That list on the right, that long shopping list, are all the other things that we were able to do as a project and design team with Quinty in the building. And we don't have all night to go through all of them, but one I will highlight is geothermal energy. The project is not only responsible in the way it goes about the structure, but also how it uses energy. Just like the trees have already sequestered the carbon, the ground possesses the energy needed to just simply transfer, if you will, to either heat or cool the building. So when you add all of this together, this building will be not only that first mass timber hospital in North America, but it'll also be, by energy intensity usage, fancy words there, it'll be the lowest energy use hospital in North America.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, FrequencyNews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Coming up next, we have a report from Keith Dempsey, LJR reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, on the extension of the City Cruises tour season in Gananoque. Although summer has officially come to an end, the tourism scene remains lively, with vessel cruises continuing to sail through the fall and winter seasons. City Cruises Canada has announced the extension of its 2024 operating season across all three locations, giving visitors more opportunities to explore some of Canada's top tourist destinations by water. At City Cruises Gananoque, visitors can experience the stunning fall scenery through the Thousand Islands. The five-hour Thousand Islands cruise runs until October 14th, while the three-hour Thousand Islands cruise and both one-hour Thousand Islands cruises from Gananoque and Ivy Lee will be available until October 27th. This is the perfect season to experience the stunning autumn foliage in three iconic destinations, and there's no better view than from the deck of one of our vessels, says Maury DiMaurizio, Chief Operating Officer of City Cruises Canada. We're excited to extend the success of our incredible 2024 season into the fall and winter months. In addition to that story, Keith Dempsey has another report on the progress of Gananoque's revitalization of Rotary Beach. Last week, as part of the revitalization project, the Natural Edge program was on site at Rotary Beach in Gananoque. Participants planted a wide variety of plants to help protect the shoreline and create a natural edge. And more progress overall was completed at the beach and park. The benches are back on the gazebo, topsoil has been spread and seeded, rocks are in place for planting grassing and scrubs in the next few days. All the new benches, tables, bike rack, and kayak stands are all ordered, and we are waiting on delivery, reads a statement by
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
So please don't walk on the soil, Rotary Club asks residents and visitors. And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that report. Coming up now, it's time for the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast. On Thursday night, we expect mainly cloudy skies in the Kingston area, a low plus 3 with a risk of frost. On Friday, October 11th, we'll have sunny skies and a high of 20. Friday night, cloudy periods with a 30% chance of showers and a low of 8. On Saturday, October 12th, we'll have sunny skies and a high of 15. Saturday night, we'll see clear skies with a low plus 3. And on Sunday, October 13th, we'll have a mix of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of showers and a high of 14, and Sunday night, cloudy with a low plus 3.
Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time.
Keep up with what's hot on CFRC Airwaves. Find us today on Instagram and Facebook. Follow us at CFRC Music and keep your finger on the pulse of Kingston's best music mix.
Hi, I'm James Abrams.
And I'm John Abrams.
And we're the Abrams Brothers. And you're listening to CFRC 101.9.
Please support community radio. Pro Bono Radio, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
Join us each week as Queen's Law Pro Bono Radio discusses interesting and off-center legal topics and aims to make discussions about the law more accessible to you.
Pro Bono Radio is produced by the students at the Queen's University Faculty of Law.
Established in 1957, Queen's Faculty of Law has long been the school of choice for law students in Canada, thanks to its preeminent reputation for both academic excellence and community spirit.
For more information, visit us at probonoradio.com.
Welcome. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. My name is Cindy. This is Absolutely Frivolous. Woohoo! I'm very mellow today. No, not for any specific reason necessarily, just that I saw my physio about half an hour ago. And boy, do I feel so much better. I've been in a lot of pain this week, so it's kind of nice to be a little pain-free with my back. Anyway, that's not funny. We're here for funny things, aren't we? This is the whole nature of Absolutely Frivolous, is funny stuff. And if I can find funny stuff, I will put it on the air for you. And I also like to share all the wonderful things about CFRC, like, I don't know, we turned 101.9 years old. I'm so happy. Anyway, I'm very glad that this station is still running. It makes me feel good about life to know there's some continuous stuff happening. Oh no, I feel like I jinxed it. I'm just going to knock on some wood over here. I don't want anything to happen to this station, so I'll stop talking. I will talk about events happening this week. I guess Fort Fright has returned to Fort Henry, and I'm going to be going. I hope you go too. It's supposed to be really fun. I did it years and years ago, like maybe 10 years ago, so now I'm worried it might even be scarier than it was. Not that it was super scary before, but, you know, I'm a bit of a chicken at times. So I'm looking forward to it, though. It should be fun. Tonight, there's also, oh, I guess we missed it. It was at 10 a.m., but there was a Women in STEM panel that ran this morning for Kingston Climate Expo. That would have been very interesting. I hope some of you went to hear about it. Tomorrow night, there's karaoke at the Buckle, which is always fun. I haven't been yet, but I'm told it's great. It's a country music-filled evening, and it runs every Friday. On Saturday, oh, Queen's Observatory has an open house at 7:30 p.m. I've done that before a couple times, actually. It's located in Ellis Hall on Queen's campus. It's free for all ages. I highly recommend it, especially if you have kids. You go up into the observatory, you look through the big telescope. They have some really good information that they share with you. And, of course, it's weather permitting, too, so. And Sunday is the Kingston Memorial Center Farmers Market. Definitely bring your shopping bag, see what local producers in the Kingston area have in store for you. Enjoy live music and activities while you shop. There's something for everyone there. So, yes, definitely check that out. But you're here for comedy. I don't know. You know what? They should have, like, instead of music, they should also have, like, a half-hour stand-up comedian sesh. Maybe because they often have two different performers for the music. It would be nice to break that up with a half hour of a guy just, or girl, telling jokes, or a person telling jokes for half an hour and just making people laugh as they shop. I think that would be an awesome thing, especially if it was all dad jokes. I would be so there for it. I'm going to suggest that the next time I'm there. But today, in terms of jokes, we've got two people. We've got Kurt Brownhaller. I'm terrible with names. Sometimes I do apologize. He's going to talk about Instagram. And later on, we're going to have Fortune Feimster. And she's going to talk about living in Spain. So, yeah, I think you're going to enjoy this. I really, really do. So why don't we get started? Here's Kurt and his opinions on Instagram on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Yay! Thank you. Guys, I haven't been on Instagram today. Does anybody know if the sun set? Or if anybody ate any food? I just like to keep in touch. I went into a store just down the street recently. When I walked in, the sales lady just went, "It's good to see you." And I was like, I don't know how to deal with this information at all. So I just did the only thing I thought was appropriate, and I just said, "It's been too long," and I kissed her on the mouth. I recently just moved to L.A., and so I've been driving a lot, listening to L.A. radio, and I did not know that 90% of L.A. radio is just Sublime. I had no idea, but I like it. I found that I have a favorite Sublime song. It's the song where the Sublime guy goes, "I can play a guitar like a mother effing riot," and then just slowly plink plonks on an acoustic guitar. Just plink plonk, plink plonk, plink plonk. I was like, that is a riot. If your definition of a riot is just one lone seagull trying to get a sandwich out from inside a baby grand piano. Scared and confused. I like to do stupid things to strangers because I think it helps make the world a better place. So, guys, here's three fun things you can do today to make the world a better place. One, next time you fart, just yell, "Nothing but net!" It's confusing and fun to say. Two, next time you go into a cafe to read a book, right before you open your book, just look up and yell, "Y'all ready for this?" And then quietly open your book and start reading. Number three, you won't see the effects of this, but you'll know you did an awesome thing. Go to Facebook, find a stranger, go like a year back in their photos, and just like one photo. Keep them guessing for hours. Who is this? And why do they like this picture of me eating pizza? I like to do weird things like that, maybe because of the way I was raised. I don't mean to disturb you, but I now have to tell you three true facts about myself, Kurt Brownoler. Fact number one, I breastfed until I was 5 years old. Five! Deal with that! Look at me and know that's true. Five. That's some Game of Thrones shit, y'all. Five! I have a specific memory of breastfeeding and watching TV and asking my mom to change a channel because I was bored. Five. I didn't know it was weird until I started telling people. But also, I'm 6'4", and I never get sick. Fact number two. My best friend from ages 5 to 10 had Tourette's, and I had no idea. He moved away at age 10, and after he left, my mom was like, "You know, Mike had Tourette's." I was like, "What's that?" She's like, "Watch this video." I was like, "Oh, somebody should have told me. Because I've just been mimicking him back to himself all the time. I thought it was our fun way of chatting with each other. I'd just be like, yeah, okay, and then agree with him again and hit him." Third fact. I started smoking when I was 10 years old. What up, Jersey? 10. 5 years after I stopped breastfeeding, I started smoking. And the entire time in between, I was pretending like I had Tourette's. That's how you make this soup. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, everybody. This is John inviting you to check out Happy Town here on CFRC on Sunday afternoons from 1 to 3 p.m. On this show, you'll hear a mix of music from rural North American traditions, such as bluegrass, old-time music, a little bit of honky-tonk, country blues, and gospel. as well. You're also going to hear about music from Kingston area groups, samples from their new albums, as well as news about upcoming shows. So come to Happy Town on Sunday afternoons, relax, and fortify yourself to face the slings and arrows of Monday morning. Every Sunday afternoon from 1 to 3, where traditional music thrives in Kingston, CFRC 101.9 FM.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea-treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's Community Kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines she rescues.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
Hi, I'm Alan Cross. You may know me as the guy who does the ongoing history of new music. You're listening to CFRC 101.9.
Here you are at last to bring my cold, lonely soul. From my weary past, always searching the one missing piece was you. And I beg you, come away with me, and together we will find a place to call our own. I can't wait to see what I can laptop like you. It's not your CD slot or the Unix on which you are based. You make my lap hot. Underneath your aluminum case, there's love. Now forgive your strange one-button mouse. I forgive the way your keyboard leaves marks on your screen. I can overlook a fault or two for a laptop like you. We will always be together. Laptop like you. For a laptop like you.
Hey, this is Brendan Canning from Broken Social Scene. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
It does feel like I'm home because I've always felt like I'm like a Tuesday night stripper. Like, you guys, well, by now you've heard my accent. You know, I'm not very sophisticated, so there's that. I'm from North Carolina, and you know, I like grew up, I guess you would call like a redneck. I was a redneck. Like, I wasn't like one of those people that like walked into a gas station barefoot like Britney Spears. That's just gross. Like, I had class. I was like one of those people that drank out of a mason jar, you know? Like, I was like one of the, and that was before it was like cool. Like, now it's cool to drink out of a mason jar, you know? People do it because it's vintage. They want to feel like they're in a Mumford and Sons video. They're like, I want to drink out of a mason jar. It's cool. I was like, I drank out of a mason jar because I was a redneck. Like, I had green beans in a mason jar like 2 days before, and now I'm drinking out of it, you know? I want to drink out of my mason jar. I want my mason jar. That's what's happening now. I'm just telling you guys. I drank out of a mason jar before it was cool. So one thing my family didn't do, we didn't travel. Like, that was not our thing, you know. Our idea of branching out was going to the hometown buffet, like, across town. Like, that was dangerous. And if we wanted culture, I went to a Chinese restaurant and ordered lo mein. Like, that was culture to me. Or I would put hollandaise sauce on my steak instead of A1 sauce, which is delicious. That just makes me really hungry. I love A1 sauce. So, you know, we definitely didn't leave the country. That was crazy. You know, once when I was young, I asked my dad what abroad meant, and he looked at me like I was stupid, like, duh, it's a hot chick. And I was like, yes. That sounds exactly right. So by the time I graduated college, yes, that did happen. I was like, you know, I need to broaden my horizons. I need to go see the world. And, like, Mexico doesn't count, you know, because, like, it's right next door, and it's, like, it's not sophisticated. You can, like, you know, get, like, a six-pack of beer and a hooker and a box of Chiclets for, like, $3, you know? And you can use a Groupon on top of that. So I was like, I need to see the world. So I decided I was going to move to Spain, which was not a great idea. I'm like, why? And not only was I going to travel there, I was like, I'm going to live there for an entire year. I'm going to pick a place where they don't speak English. That's fun. No, it's not. So when I arrived to Spain, I realized why Americans don't travel abroad. I realized why they don't live in other countries. Because it fucking sucks. I'm like, why am I an asshole? Because I want more ice in my drink, you know? Why do I have to pay 75 cents to use your ass public restroom? I mean, I was glad that, like, their gypsies and vagrants didn't murder you like they, you know, the ones do in America. They'll just kill you. These guys will just steal your purse when you go to the bathroom. And by the way, I used to carry a purse all the time before I went to Spain. I was just walking down the street, me and my purse. Just me and my purse going to Starbucks, drinking out of a mason jar. Now I don't carry a purse. Thanks a lot, Spain. So I arrived in Spain. The thing about living in Spain is, like, you want to, like, blend in, you know? And I stuck out like a sore thumb. And by sore thumb, I mean a fat, curly-haired, tall American who everybody stared at everywhere I went. And it didn't help that we had gone to war that year with Iraq. And so everyone hated America. It was awesome. So everywhere I went, like, people didn't even wave at me. They just were like this immediately. I was like, cool, I'm pretty sure that's not how you say hola. So to make, like, this travel experience even greater, I was like, you know what, I want the full experience. I'm going to live with a native Spaniard. This sounds, like, awesome. We can, like, habla español, todos los días. That's every day in Spanish, ma'am. Thank you. God, some people have no culture. So I was like, I'm gonna live with a native Spaniard. So I get to her apartamento, that's apartment. And she wasn't there, so, like, I had to end up waiting outside her door for an hour with, like, three huge suitcases and my purse. So I finally, the lady comes home, she's like 80 years old. She's like cute. She's adorable. She's like the Spanish Betty White. I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. I'm living with the Spanish Betty White. And she was like, she really took to me too. And so, like, she took to me like too soon, like 3 hours, within 3 hours of being there, I walk into the den and she's sitting on the couch and she is there, but her hair is no longer with her. I'm like, she had hair when I showed up. I know she had hair when I showed up. These are the kind of things you don't forget. She did not have hair. So I'm like scanning the room and all of a sudden I see a wig just like hanging on the lampshade. I'm like, oh my God, that's her hair. Oh my God. And she's sitting there on the couch and she just has two sprigs of curly hair. Just two sprigs just hanging out like that. Like that, ma'am. Just like, in your face. I'm like, oh my God. She showed me to my room. I was like, okay, I can handle this. Like, whatever. I can get past this. She showed me to my room. It's the size of a closet. And at this point, I didn't know I was a lesbian yet. What? You're a lesbian? That's crazy. You're so feminine. I know, thank you. So at this point, I am living in a closet, both literally and figuratively. It's not great. So the thing about this lady is that she wanted to turn me into a señorita. She wanted me to be like the best future housewife to a man ever. Like, she's like, I gotta prepare you for your future husband. And I'm like, I think it's going to take a lot more than cooking and cleaning, but cool, like, whatever, we'll try this. And so she would, like, hand me a broom, and I would pretend to be allergic to it. I was like, no! And I even tried to get my own haircut. I tried to get a haircut. I go to the beauty parlor. That's what we call them in the South, beauty parlors. And I go there, and I tell the guy I want a trim. I'm like, I just, you know, I want a trim. In America, a trim is like, that much, okay? In Spain, you end up looking like Miley Cyrus, and not in the good way. I'm like, at the end of this haircut, I'm like this. I have no hair. I look like Katie Lang. That's a lesbian. She's not great. So I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I don't know what to do. And like, I need a friend. I need a Betty White. I need to eat cheesecake with somebody. So I'm like, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go home and I'm going to find the one person who understands what it's like not to have hair. She will understand my plight. So I get home and I walk in the door and I'm ready to be like, hey, we're in this together. We both don't have hair now. We're BFF forever. And she sees me walk in the door and she looks at me like this. I'm like, excuse me? And then she says, K-Faya, which I don't know if you know what this means. K-Faya means how ugly. She said, how ugly. I'm like, you have two sprigs of hair. You have two f***ing sprigs of hair. I will f***ing shank you. I will kill you. I will shank you. You f***ing two sprigs of hair. So I was like, I'm done. I said, I'm done with you. I am done with Spain. I will never live abroad again. I was like, I'm going to Mexico because I love hookers and I have a Groupon.
Hi, I'm Danny Michelle, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 in Kingston, Ontario.
Song.